Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast about Deep Space Nine by two guys who are, as ever, just a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ours is a podcast grounded in rules, Ben.
Yeah.
The show is nothing if it does not strictly prescribe to those rules. And the name of the game today is Quark's Bar, because at the end of the last episode we recorded, Ben rolled the die that sent us to the Quark's Bar Square, which means we will be enjoying alcoholic beverages as we record today's episode.
People thought that we were going to be drinking every three episodes when we rolled this game out. That has not proved to be true.
I bet there are some people that are disappointed about that. I'm not one of them.
Our wives certainly are not among those people.
It can't be overstated just what a terrible look it is for a hardworking wife to come home from a shift and find a shithoused podcaster at home waiting for them.
Yeah, that has a real chilling effect on feelings of affection.
God, you know, that could be the name of our show, Ben. I mean, Greatest Generation, great name. Chilling effect, though, really says it.
Pretty on the nose.
What are you drinking, man?
I'm drinking this Bozal Tobaish Mezcal. Tobaish, I think, is a species of agave. So this is a mezcal made entirely of that species. Sometimes you find an espadine. That's, I think, the most common. Sometimes they're a blend of different mezcals. This one's a Tobaish. How about you? What are you on there, buddy?
As promised, I broke out my bottle of Casamigos, which I did a little research, and you were right, Ben. George Clooney was bought out of the Casamigos company for a hefty sum. And so his attachment to this mezcal seems to be in signature only. His signature is on the bottle. This is an Espadine mezcal, and it is one of my new favorites. It is reviewed very poorly online among mezcal circles for reasons I don't agree with, but like so many other things spirit-related, it's a personal taste thing, and this really works for me.
The idea that drinkability would be a knock against it is really calling into question the reliability of the review website that you found there, buddy.
Drinkability is like... it's like the high school thing of you want to be drinking a glass of shitty scotch, warm. And that's how you prove that you're an adult. But I think drinkability is a crucial element in the enjoyment of a mezcal or anything else.
I like a funky thing from time to time. I like to push the boundaries, but...
A funky pechuga, perhaps?
But it's a big tent. Let's fucking enjoy lots of different kinds of things. I'm not one of those people that, like, picks a beer and that's the only beer they drink for the rest of their life, you know?
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. In this day and age, grab what you enjoy and enjoy it while you can.
Yeah. What do we got here? It's season 2, episode 21. The Maquis.
Maquis?
Part 2.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
We begin with a nice last time on Deep Space Nine bit of business here.
Yeah, and Riker tells Mr. Worf to fire. We fade up on the same action that we crashed out on last time.
I gotta tell you, this very first pre-credit sequence scene was deeply disappointing to me. Everyone's holding each other up at phaser point. Kira and Bashir throw their phasers to the ground. And for some reason, Cal and Ben Sisko take a walk on their own. And they don't go anywhere, Ben.
They just walk in a circle in the Ace Garden Center.
I looked up who directed the episode, and it's Corey Allen. He's the guy who directed the premiere episode of TNG, and he's a lifer. He's directed so many episodes of Star Trek.
Encounter at Farpoint, one of the worst episodes of TNG? How could such a director direct a bad scene?
He's a legacy director that I wanted to root for, but there's a lot, even editing-wise, that doesn't hang together in this sequence. There's a lot of intercutting from similar composition to composition.
Yeah, some jumpy cuts. And they go for some flashy camera moves. Like, you know, lots of like crane shots with lots of foliage in the foreground. And
there's a moment where Cal like definitely holds a branch out of the camera lens to allow him to deliver some more exposition before cutting to a different angle.
You know, when you direct a couple of actors having a conversation, what you want are the movements they make around the set to be motivated, you know, like all of the staging should advance the story or, you know, raise the emotional stakes. This walk seems aimless, and that is not what these characters are. They're not aimless at all. Like, they are working at cross purposes, but they are super motivated dudes, and the idea that they're just kind of like wandering around together doesn't make any fucking sense.
The instinct to pair them off and separate them, I think, is good. Like, you want them to have their alone time where they can really get into the business at hand without having to mince words because of other people around. Like, that part of it I get.
Right.
And if that was so important, I would have rather had, for some reason, Ben Sisko beam down alone, or Ben Sisko and Cal to meet each other at a second location for some kind of summit.
Site. Yeah.
There was something about, like, I understand that they're forced into this, but kind of a rocky start in my mind for how this episode begins.
Yeah. I like how all the Maquis dress Bajoran. Like, their costuming is definitely Bajoran influenced, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't wear the kind of clothes that federations that are, you know, non-Starfleets but live well within the Federation live.
Yeah.
They wear, like, you know, pizza oven guy clothes.
The sweater vest is literally good for nothing.
There is really a unified theory of non-Starfleet clothing.
Yeah, I mean, like, this scene is about Cal Hudson rejecting his uniform. Like, Ben Sisko is, like, picking it up off the forest floor and trying to get him to put it back on.
Well, it's been feeling a little tight lately.
And he's like, no, I dress Bajoran now.
At the conclusion of Cal's walk of Sisko around the home and garden center, they return to one. At which point, the Maquis phaser down Sisko, Kira, and Bashir.
Yeah, that shit is rugged. I kind of wish that had been the cut in between the two episodes.
Yeah, I agree.
Because then you would come back and not know, like, oh, fuck, did, like, three main cast characters just get murked? Like, are they fucking dead now?
And much like the space between Dukat and Sisko snagging that runabout and taking off for parts unknown, we cut back to, after the show open, to Deep Space Nine, after the away teams return from this planet.
Yeah, like, presumably they just, like, woke up from stun, returned to their runabout, which the Maquis left unmolested in orbit, and, like, went back to work.
Yeah.
It's so weird because, like, it does show them, like, lying face down in the dirt with, like, mist rolling over them. Like, they look super dead. It is crazy to think a TV show had three main characters appear to be dead and did not attempt to extract any like dramatic stakes out of that at all, or ever address it again. Like Sisko isn't even mad at Cal about having shot him.
I think that's crucial. And I think what happens when you depict people being shot by phasers in this way is you take the teeth out of any future incident involving our DS9 crew being shot with phasers.
Yeah.
Like, you want an element of danger there that they aren't bothered to depict. I could have really used some antipathy from Kira towards Sisko for having been gotten the drop on like this.
Huh.
Like, Kira's feelings about the Maquis and about the Cardassians are punctuated by some scenes that she has with Sisko, but are for the most part absent. And this is a moment where I'd really like to know what she's thinking, because they beam down to this planet, these guys get the jump on them, and they have to slink back to Deep Space Nine, having been defeated by them.
Yeah. Oh, like, this is your college buddy and he shot me? Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, I would really have loved it if Kira tore into Sisko in his office, like asking him what the fuck just happened and why she had to be shot over it.
Right. It seems like something she would do, and also something that would actually influence Sisko to reassess his thinking on this matter, you know?
Yeah. 'Cause
that is a strength that his character has. We don't get that scene. Instead, we get them just kind of getting back to the station and Sisko heading up to his office where none other than Admiral Nechayev is waiting for him.
The tight bun herself. On the scene, really great to see her, Ben. I don't know how you felt when you saw her on Deep Space Nine, but like, I enjoy any connective tissue between TNG and Deep Space Nine, and so she was a welcome sight for me.
Yeah, I wished that some Valerian canapé had been prepared in honor of her arrival. I thought that was a little weird that it wasn't.
They're extremely fattening.
Some canapé that could then be just scraped into the garbage after the meeting.
Yeah. She acknowledges that she appreciates it was prepared and then it is never addressed again.
It seems like she's really out in the sticks to be adjudicating this matter. I think she represents an escalation to this conflict that makes her presence a big reason why this is such a serious matter.
I think this is a show that has been sort of searching for what it can be about. And I think that this episode, like Nechayev leaves and Kira comes in, and there's this great speech by Sisko about the fact that Earth is paradise, and the like decision makers are kind of in this ivory tower where they don't understand the real problems. And to me, that kind of like, for the first time maybe in this series, plants a flag in the idea that Deep Space Nine is about living right on the edge of a perfect society, like right at the border, you know? Like the post-scarcity thing gets up to Deep Space Nine, and then like the colonies near the Cardassian border don't have it and are being kind of left in the lurch. And like, Kira is fucking pissed about it because she's lived on the other side of that line her entire life, and still really feels for that cause.
Makes sense to me.
And I think Sisko is getting there, but he's lived in the warm embrace of a utopia his entire life.
It made me think a lot about, like, what do you truly care about in a post-scarcity society? And we get a couple of different examples of this. When Cal talks about the humans living on the other side of the demilitarized zone, the main beefs are of the type of, this is where I've lived my whole life and I don't want to leave it.
Right.
Like, those are things that cannot be replicated elsewhere.
Right. Those are goods that you can't manufacture.
Yeah.
And trade.
Yeah. It feels like a way of depicting the Federation that never could have happened in early TNG or in the original series. Like, this is a contravention of peak Roddenberry themes.
Right. Like, they don't want to be crushed under a Cardassian boot heel, but the people that they're asking to ensure that doesn't happen, they also don't trust with any decision.
Right.
So I mean, like, you have to indict the motivation of the Maquis.
Maquis?
In that way, because it's like, hey, like, you gotta, like, that costs something, you know, that protection, that, like, stability that you want. And part of that cost might be allowing somebody else to have influence over, like, where you live or whatever.
Why are there so many fucking farmers in Star Trek? Like, the thing that I don't get is, like, I understand, you know, Joe Sweatervest has got a life on a planet in the DMZ, and the treaty has made it so that that planet is now in Cardassian airspace.
Right.
Like, and I understand that if you're a farmer, the implements with which you can use towards rebellion or uprising or terrorism are limited.
Yeah.
But where are the people who are not farmers?
Are you the farmer?
Stop saying that, Whitnell! Of course he's the fucking farmer!
I think that, like, we've seen kind of a couple of examples of this. Like, the guy that didn't want to leave his pizza oven. Like, that guy needed to be a farmer because he lived on a moon and didn't have a replicator. And was a Bajoran. Like, he was from the other side of the line. The example that TNG gives us of people that are, like, really exercised about this treaty are, like, Native Americans who do not want to be a part of the Federation society at all, and they moved away, and then, like, political decisions happening way above their head caused their home to be part of a different government that they also don't want to be involved with, like... Like, they're separatists of both things. This farmer thing, like, I agree, like, kind of doesn't make a lot of sense in this context.
These guys really love farming.
Gold Ducat. Ducat. Gold Ducat.
So, our next scene in this episode is a scene that I've been waiting for a while, which is Odo has caught Quark doing dirt and has actually locked him up for it.
Surely it's no crime keeping company with a beautiful female.
He's been running guns. He's been supplying arms to terrorists.
Which, on Quark's rap sheet over the last couple of seasons, is it might be the worst thing that he's done, but it's at least a part of, like, six very bad things that he's done.
Right. Yeah. I mean... We got a little laundry list from Kira recently of reasons she doesn't like him. Yeah. Add this right to the top of the list, because I think she's probably, like, more on Team Maquis than on Team Federation, personally.
Right.
But professionally, like, give me a fucking break. But this is a weird scene, because, like, Sisko's called down there, and Sisko has been let's follow the rules guy the entire time.
Yeah.
And when they leave, he's like, leave him in jail forever.
I don't feel like you can joke with Odo. I don't get the sense that he has a sense of humor.
Yeah. I don't get the sense that Sisko is joking either.
Hard to say. I guess it's his word or the highway.
Yeah. They didn't take Quark's belt from him or anything, so I guess they're not that concerned.
They don't think he's an autoerotic asphyxiation risk?
Yeah, what, does he tie it around his ear? I don't think so.
Quark's got all that time alone. He's like, well, might as well jack it.
I know I'm in this room with a transparent force field wall, but nobody else in here.
Do you think they can turn... Do you think there's a modesty setting for that force field? Mm. You hope there is, right?
I don't know, because, like, in contemporary jails, you have to take a dump out in the open, right?
Yeah, but you don't see a brig toilet in there, and you don't see a drain in the floor. So what's happening?
I don't know. Maybe they beam the turds right out of his lower intestine.
God, that must feel so satisfying. Could you imagine?
Yeah, the crabs...
I would sign up for that tomorrow.
The crabs just go from the pot to the tanks on the ship without any intermediary process.
you go to bed full and you wake up empty.
Oh man,
sounds nice.
Would enjoy.
Drink all the coffee you want, Ben. Consequence free.
Yeah, they, like, walk out of the security office and they, like, bump right into Leggett Parn, who is a, I guess Leggett is kind of like Admiral in Cardassian.
Yeah, I had to look this up too. He has very shiny armor for a Cardassian, and I don't know that we've seen a Leggett before.
Yeah, really a big upgrade.
He kind of carries himself like the John Goodman of Cardassians.
This guy has like the most specific sci-fi credits of all time.
He's really been around.
He's in Undiscovered Country.
That was not his name.
He's in Voyage Home.
There be whales here!
He's in Voyager.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
He's in Star Trek Enterprise. He's in MacGyver.
Just tell me what you want me to fuck!
He's in Babylon 5.
I love that MacGyver qualified as science fiction in that list of credits.
John Shuck.
He's a definite that guy, and he's a Star Trek that guy at that.
Yeah, he really is.
Leggett Parnes on the scene to confirm Cal's suspicions that Cardassians have been smuggling weapons into the DMC.
It's interesting that we get two Admiralty level characters in this episode, but they don't ever interact directly. Like, all of this goes through Sisko.
God, I was just gonna say that. Like, is Nacheev still on the station?
Yeah, where'd she go? she's having canapes in her room. Doesn't have time for this guy.
Yeah, wouldn't it be more efficient if they were talking to each other? I think so.
But Parn is specifically saying that Dukat is behind the whole thing.
You have my word.
This is kind of the Cardassian government, like, throwing one of their own under the bus to advance their political goals, right?
Yeah, and this introduces a fun bit of business between Kira and Sisko, because Kira's on team, well, if the Cardassian higher-ups want to let Dukat swing for this, why don't we let Dukat get what's coming to him? And Sisko's like, the enemy of our enemy is our friend, maybe. What if in saving Dukat from the Central Command, like that actually does us a favor? Like, keeping him alive would be good strategically for us.
I have to say, I kind of feel Kira on this one.
Yeah?
I think so. Like, I think that we've known enough about Dukat that from a stability factor, he is not a great dude. What you want is a predictable adversary. And Dukat is so fucking unpredictable. Like, let's take him off the board, you know?
Yeah, I get that angle. But it's interesting that this decision point happens at this part of the episode, because when Gul Dukat turns from heel to face.
Wait.
Sisko's instinct
is... I don't know
is,
wrestling. I don't remember what those terms mean.
Well, to be a heel means to be a bad guy, and to be a face means to be a good guy.
To be a face is to be a good guy?
Yeah.
Why?
Don't ask me why. It's just a thing. So I like this tension between Kira and Sisko. Ultimately, they choose Sisko's path, which is the...
Yeah, they choose the boss's path. That's what you do.
When you're the boss, you get to follow your own instincts there.
Yeah, you get to blaze your trail.
Speaking of Dukat, they cut to Dukat, where he's being force-melded by Sakona.
Yeah, force-melded in a way that is not quite as upsetting as the end of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Because it don't work.
It would appear he has the ability to shield his thoughts.
Simply a matter of discipline.
Is it she's like not as good of a Vulcan as Spock? Like, is she not as good at Vulcan mind meld shit?
Well, Dukat tells her to her face that Cardassians are practiced in the art of stoicism and not letting Vulcans who wish to meld with them into the mind door. I love Dukat here. I love a confident prisoner like him.
He is big dogging his captors, man, when he's got shackles on him.
He's great.
Yeah.
This is kind of a turning point for how we feel about Dukat. Up until now, chaos agent, sort of a son of a bitch. but he holds up under torture in such a way that I think begins a transformation for him into a guy you can, like, guardedly root for, maybe.
Yeah. You remember that time we took a Lyft ride with a guy that said that he used to work in Guantanamo Bay as a prisoner, like as like a prison guard?
Boy, do I ever.
That was so fucking weird.
The lesson, of course, is never ask a Lyft driver what they did before doing Lyft. Because boy, did this guy have a story.
Yeah.
Fresh out of the Navy, doing like 11 years, hated it.
Yeah.
But I guess the part that he hated wasn't working in Guantanamo. It was being on a ship. He hated that the most.
He repeatedly told us that the reason he got out of the Navy was that he didn't want to stab somebody with a screwdriver and that he was going to if he stayed in the Navy.
We've got a bunch of neighbors in our audience.
That's true.
Who've written in to say hi, tell us that they like the show. This is the first Navy person who has shared those kind of feelings about being in the service. Really hostile.
Yeah. We got out of that ride and we're like, "All right, buddy. glad you're on a better path."
We're going to go eat an obscene amount of Korean barbecue.
Which is what we are always doing when we get out of a lift together, right?
Ben, I don't want to end the story there. I want to talk about having Korean barbecue with our good friend Ben Fritz.
Oh yeah, Ben Fritz, who got you into the premiere of Star Trek Discovery.
Great writer for the Wall Street Journal. And a moment that was maybe the most scared I have ever been at a Korean restaurant. It's the moment where we've got the menu open and we're looking over what to get. And really, Ben, I think the choice at Korean barbecue is always big meat or two big meats. And Ben Fritz came out right away and said, "I don't eat beef."
Right.
I thought this was a bit.
Yeah, we both were like getting ready to yes and the "I don't eat beef." And he was like, "No, seriously, I don't. But order whatever you want. Like, I'll pick around it." And we're like,
K-pop like skips off of the record player.
Yeah. Everybody in the restaurant turns, including the super drunk 18-person birthday table that was two sections away from us.
I was legit scared at this point because I've never gone all pork at Korean barbecue. I've always had big beef and then maybe dessert pork.
I used to be like Ben Fritz, where I would eat swine, but I would not eat beef. And I've loosened the rules up, but it's kind of a rare dietary choice, right? Like the no beef, but yes, swine guy.
I mean, he was looking at your wife when he said this, so I thought it was sort of a power move there.
Yeah, my wife, who is Jewish and has lots of misgivings about how much I enjoy a nice pork chop from time to time.
We put together an ordering system, Ben, that we've never done before at Korean barbecue, but which I will say worked out great. The answer was little beef, little pork.
Yeah, so there was something for wifey, there was something for Ben Fritz, and Ben and Adam ate most of it.
The server tried to discourage us from going this path. She's like, "No, that's too much food." And in my own way, I made her understand that she was wrong about that.
In an Asian cuisine context, there is often a thing where you try and order something and the server will attempt to dissuade you from it, most often because it's too spicy, but also sometimes because you don't understand the portion size.
Right.
And we stared that server down and said, "No, we are doing this.
Give me a keg of beer.
You don't understand. We're here to destroy ourselves and Ben's wife and our friend Ben Fritz."
I mean, to her credit, we did not put our Korean barbecue punch cards on the table, thus demonstrating our veteran Korean barbecue status.
The flight log book that we both keep to show how many air miles that we've accumulated.
The log book that the previous servers must sign off on so that we can get our license to eat Korean barbecue. Ben, I think she got the picture by the time our sixth rice wine showed up for our table of four.
Yeah, I was ordering two more bottles at once at some point in that meal, and she laughed at me and was like, all right. I think that's when she understood what monsters we truly were.
There's a secret level at Korean barbecue that you unlock. After the sixth bottle, the server drinks the seventh with you. We couldn't quite make it there with our foretop, but
yeah,
it was a delightful amount of consumption with that party especially. And such great company, too. I love that guy, Ben Fritz.
Yeah, Ben Fritz, A+. My wife also.
Yeah, your wife also A+.
A+.
Let's not forget about her.
One of the great ladies.
willing to eat beef and pork with the gang.
Yeah. Yeah, usually her rule is she'll eat a pork thing if pork isn't one of the words in the name. Like, pork chop, no. Chorizo, yes. But this time, she suspended the rules. Kang Ho Dong is Switzerland for her.
Sure is.
So this prisoner torture situation is interrupted by a very rude Ben Sisko and gang just showing up and inviting themselves in, asking everybody to stand down very politely. But Gul Dukat does not want a peaceful withdrawal in this situation.
Yeah, he's goading both parties into a firefight.
Will you stop talking and shoot them?
Like, this dude is in the middle of the battlefield that he is setting up, and he is fucking threatening everybody. And
I love this about him.
And it's also like 8 or 10 Maquis.
Maquis?
Right? And then it's just Sisko, Dr. Bashir, and Odo, who is known not to carry a weapon. So it's like
Odo, who should have been on the first away team mission.
He really should have.
Odo, Mr. Fantastic's head sweater vest guy, Amoros, like taking him off of a ladder he's trying to escape on.
I've been wanting to see Odo do this to somebody for 2 seasons.
Yeah, I know.
Great payoff. And like a really well done special effect, right? The like turning just a part of an actor into a CG effect, that's pretty challenging, right?
Yeah, and it looks good.
It looks great. So they knock everybody out and they leave Sweater Vest alive. And Sisko says, "Hey, listen, Cal Hudson and I, we're still buddies. And I understand that like he's starting to come down on another side of this issue from where I'm at. But if you see him, you tell him the situation has gotten out of hand and maybe we've all done things that we regret. And so to protect his dignity, what I've done is not tell Admiral Nechayev that he has flipped."
I think this is fucked up. And this all goes back to the very first scene with Nechayev, right? Like, that she doesn't have all the information, W/R/T Cal,
yeah.
I think it's a missed opportunity for a more interesting way to tell the story, but it sort of fucks with the logic of the show, because I think this episode gets a lot more intense if Nechayev is like, "Hey, your orders have changed. Your orders are now to apprehend Cal and bring him in dead or alive. Like, he's a huge threat to the DMZ. He could cause a war right now. Like, bring him in."
Right.
And because she's ignorant of Cal's true feelings, because Ben Sisko didn't tell her, but I wish that was where this episode jumped off from. Because Sisko talked to Nechayev right after waking up from being phasered on the planet. Why was that not in his report?
Why is he still carrying water for Hudson?
Yeah. And I think that's fucked up.
It's that like personal loyalty ahead of loyalty to, you know, king and country thing.
But by not being specific, you don't allow Sisko's character to take one side or the other. It just goes unspoken.
Can you imagine this ever happening in TNG?
Right.
Like anybody ever betraying anybody on that ship on a basis like this?
I know. To have it go unmentioned, I think, is a mistake.
So they get Dukat back to the station and he basically turns it into an opportunity to pig out.
These are character building scenes with Dukat, like one after the other, where we're starting to grow our esteem for him.
Do you think that's yamek sauce that he's putting on all his food?
It's gotta be. I think it's great that he drinks it out of the cup.
Yeah. He's hitting the cup. He's like drizzling it all over his vegetables. And I kind of think that all of this is going according to plan for Dukat. Like, he doesn't know that he's been thrown under the bus by the Central Command yet, so
yeah, He has the appetite of a man who's not being hunted down.
Yeah. They talk a little bit about Cardassian jurisprudence in this scene, where, like, if there's a trial in Cardassia, everybody knows the verdict before it starts.
Right.
In a way that it's not like it's a foregone conclusion, but, like, it's the presumption of guilt.
Yeah.
And it is a great scene because it feels like Sisko has laid this, like, rhetorical trap for Dukat when he reveals the fact that the Central Command have betrayed him.
They never bothered to tell me.
And Dukat has been, like, sitting there gloating about how great the Cardassian justice system is. It really, like, comes back and bites him in the ass, like, within the scene, you know?
Like, there's a theatricality to Cardassians that has pervaded their entire relationship to Star Trek.
Yeah.
And this is, like, a quintessential version of that. Like, the idea that Cardassians love the spectacle.
Yeah.
Like, whether or not the outcome is predictable or not, like, and in the sense of criminal prosecution, it is a predictable outcome. People just love the show.
But, yeah, like, when he realizes that he's actually, like, got his pants down around his ankles and has the entire time, this turns Dukat into a very different asset for the story because he flips from chaotic bad to, like, chaotic good.
If I help you stop the smuggling, will you help me stop the Maquis?
Right.
And he's suddenly, like, aligned with Sisko in a way that he, like, honestly wasn't before.
God damn it. I just sprayed foam all over my computer. That has never happened. You know how many beers we've had on this show? So many beers.
Oh, man.
What a freak thing.
I mean, we've got Colin Dinsmore already working on logging every single drunk Shimoda. There's somebody out there that can go through and find out how many beers have been heard to be opened on this show.
God, that has got to be like a 1 in 100 thing that just happened.
You gotta point the beer away from the computer when you open it up, Adam.
Like I should spin my chair around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, put yourself in the line of fire.
God, that sucks.
Is it okay? Is everything okay?
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just like, you know how, like, when someone touches your monitor, it is just, like, deeply irritating? I'm watching the beer foam dry and, like, knowing I'm going to have to do a nice monitor cleaning later. Do you know any monitor touchers in your life? I have a close friend who's a monitor toucher, and I can't believe I'm still friends with him.
Yeah, you don't want to be friends with that kind of person.
You don't recline your seat. You don't touch the monitor. I feel like there are rules of Greatest Gen, Ben, and I think we're writing them as we do the show.
Yeah.
Rule number one of Greatest Gen.
Do not recline your seat. No.
Rule number two of Greatest Gen, don't touch the monitor.
Do not touch the monitor. My monitor came with a sticker on it, like on the screen. And it was like it was a very high stress situation for me to take the sticker off. Like,
it wasn't like one of those static cling stickers. It was a sticker.
It was like post-it level sticker where it was like easy to take off, but it was adhesive. But the fact that it was a sticker, like, really stressed me out.
That's so weird. I would have expected, like, that clear plastic cling that you get on TVs and monitors that would be the thing.
Yeah.
Why are they sticking stickers on there?
They shouldn't be doing that. That's the long and the short of it, Adam, is that it shouldn't be done in the first place.
Benjamin R. Harrison writes on his Amazon item review, 1 star. They shouldn't be sticking stickers on these monitors.
Yeah, that's my personal feeling on the subject. So Dukat is exercised because he now realizes that he's kind of exposed in a way that he didn't realize. And so there's some previous aliens that have been running guns for the Cardassians, and I think that's the Lesepians, is that right?
There's the Lesepians, and then there's the Zeppelites, which are who they actually roll up on in a runabout.
The Zeppelites, of course, are an alien that's generally only available at an Italian street festival, but they're also in this episode.
You're so stupid. I love the fucking audacity of this runabout rolling up to this freighter, because the way they shoot it, this runabout looks like a tricycle rolling up on a semi-truck. Like, it does not look like they are a match. And nice neighbor Ben Sisko's like, hey guys, you mind just pulling over and maybe letting us board you or whatever?
Yeah, and much shittier neighbor Ducat reports them to the city.
Right. Ducat's like, I'll fucking kill you.
Yeah.
It's a great good cop, bad cop moment here.
Yeah. I like this alien too. I kind of wish he wasn't a one-off, because it's like, it's kind of interesting loaf design. Like, it makes him look very alien.
He's totally got Mrs. Doubtfire loaf. He looks like he just stuck his face into a cake and then tilted up to camera, and that's what he looks like. He looks like he's got frosting face. We do not agree on this, Ben. That's what I'm trying to say.
Is the runabout like that much better armed than the Zeppeli? Because they like they say that the Zeppelite ship is much faster than them.
Yeah,
but Gul Dukat threatens them on the basis of like, we are gonna fucking shoot you out of the sky unless you heave to, and this dude is like, all right.
If they're that much faster, I feel like it's a race between button pushes, right? Couldn't the Zeppelite freighter go to warp and put them out of weapons range immediately if they hit the button first? I kind of think so.
I kind of wonder if it's like a submarine thing where like the torpedoes are vastly faster than the ships.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It's Ducat's force of personality that authority shames him into surrendering, though, and it's great. It's such a great scene.
Yeah.
There's some background acting that Nana Visitor does during this that she's like, I fucking hate that guy, but god damn it. Like, that was really impressive. Like, she says all of that with her face.
Yeah, game recognized game in the Bay Main. And
yeah, it's so awesome.
She is a fucking master thespian. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's a fucking novel on her face when she looks at Ducat at the end of that scene.
It is so impressive. She is impressive every episode.
Yeah. So the Zeppelites are in fact delivering weapons to the Cardassians. And like the deal between Ducat and Sisko is like, you help me stop the arms running, I'll help you stop the Maquis.
Maquis?
And so that is like the first step of that agreement being adhered to. We cut back to the station, and Quark is in prison with his girlfriend.
You know, it begins with a little bit of a creepy vibe, like, oh, geez, like close quarters between them, that's not going to be good.
Yeah, not standard practice to have co-educational prison cells also.
But it very quickly pivots into Quark making a business case for peace.
Yeah, like the rare case, because like he also stands to gain a great deal of money from the conflict, like one way or another. But he sweats this Vulcan girl and also wants to find stability.
By making the case for peace, you could argue that it is a case that makes her safe. That could be an aspect of it.
Yeah, I wish I had any faith that her character was ever going to come back.
She didn't.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You here, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
We cut right to a meeting of the Sweater Vest Chamber of Commerce that Amoros is running, along with low-rent Gina Davis, I guess. And they're talking over the particulars of what to do in the aftermath of Ducat's escape.
They're talking over, like, yeah, like, how you defend the colonies and like, whether to put it in a curfew and, like, posting guards at the replicators and stuff. It's sort of the city council meeting of a city that has been cut off, where,
yeah,
like, they don't have anybody to protect normal states of affairs anymore. And Ben Sisko, like, barges in, like, phaser in belt. And they're like, oh, sir, if you could just wait outside, like, we have some stuff to continue finalizing, and then we'll be happy to take questions from the citizenry. And he's like, nah, dog, I have some shit to get off my chest. And one of the things that I would like to get off my chest is that the treaty is final. The war was bloody and shitty, and it's over now. And you've been given a lot of options, and what you're doing is like openly antagonistic to peace. And so we're not going to keep like defending you and backing you up. If you're an enemy of the Cardassians, you're an enemy of the Federation.
It's interesting that it's come to this, right? Because yeah. They've been operating in anonymity, in quasi-anonymity, I should say, for a while. It feels like this message could have been delivered at any point, but they finally reached a tipping point where, delivered directly, they are cautioned against further terrorist activities.
Gauntlet down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Cal, like, walks in, like, they have that thing where, like, 25 armed people come through the doors and, like, 25 armed people from every alien race in Star Trek, like Bolians and Klingons and everything come through the door. And Cal has apparently heard everything Ben Sisko has said in this room. And Ben Sisko is prepared for this. He's like, hey, this messenger bag I have, it actually has your uniform in it. I picked it up off the forest floor before I left the Ace Garden Center, and I brought it back to you, dude. And I want you to know, like, Nechayev does not know who you've been riding for. Like, as far as Starfleet knows, you've been in your office this entire time doing your work. So you have an opportunity right now to rebuke the path that these people are on and get back on the right side of history. And Cal Hudson sets his phaser to gore and kills his uniform.
How do you gore a uniform?
Yeah, why is there so much gore in there?
why were there bones in that uniform? Pretty gross. One of the tactical points of interest right now is a going concern at the weapons depot on the Brema colony, Ben.
Yeah, and Sisko has declared that this weapons depot is under his personal protection.
Because I'll be waiting there. And I will stop you.
And so, like, we get, like, a little strategy meeting on the station, you know, talking about, like, odds are in our favor, like, numerically, but they're used to asymmetric warfare. Like, this is what they've been doing.
What do you make of these little flies that they fly around?
I don't know. I think that they're the same ones that we saw in TNG episodes about the Maquis, right?
I wish this was an opportunity to bring back older class starships. Like,
that
would
be fun. Yeah.
I want to be in a Star Trek world where the Maquis raid the depot.
In like a Reliant class starship.
And they unscrap yard, like they unmothball some ships.
Yeah.
And they take an old Del Sol and an old Constitution out, and they go kick some ass with those old birds.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Instead, the interiors seem like they're very small. It seems like bunk bed shuttle type accommodations on the inside.
Right.
For these Maquis raiders.
They're the bunk beds to the king size beds of the runabouts, but the runabouts are, you know, sort of evenly matched. Like it's a fairly fun dogfight where, you know, they're trying to lock tractor beams and settle it peacefully, but the Maquis are like shooting the backpacks off of the runabouts and you know, they're much more maneuverable. So
yeah, the asymmetricality here is really fun.
But the friendship is over, and like Cal and Sisko FaceTime with each other. Like, you've been a good friend, and it's been nice knowing you. Basically, the other two runabouts get disabled, and the other Maquis ship gets disabled. Dukat is like, Sisko, you gotta fucking blow this guy out of the sky right now. Like, this is your opportunity to settle this once and for all. And Sisko is not in a killing, you know, frame of mind. He lets Cal Hudson get away.
You're a fool. A sentimental fool.
And he regrets it not long after. He thinks that he's just delaying the inevitable of what's going to be visited upon them and those involved with this treaty.
This might be the last episode of Deep Space Nine that I remember very vividly watching when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember this scene where Kira tells him he stopped a war, and he asks whether he stopped a war or just delayed the inevitable. And I remember going and like pulling the dictionary off of the bookshelf and looking up the word inevitable.
As soon as the question is asked, the answer is given because you hear the single brass instrument of delaying the inevitable play us out into the end of the episode. So they don't give us long to consider what may be happening here. Ben, I really wish that in that last moment between Ben and Cal, that I wish he had been ordered to kill Cal, and that that was what that was the tension, that was the force that he was fighting against. But right. Because this moment is totally self-motivated, entirely, I think it deadens the feeling here in a way that I wish hadn't happened.
Right, like you've got Natalia Nogalich on your call sheet. Like, get her on a second FaceTime screen saying, I am ordering you to fire.
Maybe that's hack, though. Like, maybe that's just a thing in me that's like, this feels like the format of friend up against friend in a conflict like this. You always have to bring the matter to a head through an outside force. Is that where I'm coming from? And is that a wrong way to think of it?
I don't know. I mean, I think that the odds of Cal Hudson coming back ever again are pretty low.
He didn't.
And he's a fucking great character, so you either let him go out with a bang or have him as a recurring character. This middle thing of we never hear from him again feels like dramatically not a great way to handle a character this juicy.
Yeah, we talk about missed opportunities all the time, and I think that's a big one on this show.
Yeah.
Did you like the episode, though, Ben?
I think that the second episode is uncharacteristically weaker than the first.
Right.
In this arc. But I think on balance, I liked it. There's a lot on the board now, you know? There's a lot of players in the game now. And I think that the Star Trek thing of a show taking a couple seasons to figure itself out is on full display in Deep Space Nine. And I think this is where they start to work out like what they can and can't do and what the show is about. And I like to see that happen.
That's such a great take because I feel like this two-parter has such confidence. Like it proceeds from a very confident perspective, but it doesn't have so much confidence as to know they need to keep Cal around or know that they need to force Sisko into a decision later instead of having him be self-motivated. This is so close to being a great two-parter and not just a good one. I also like the episode, but I like it for the same reason that you did, and I don't love it for those reasons as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like we're really onto something here, and it really demonstrates a potential of the series at this early moment in time.
True dat. Do you want to see if there are priority one messages for us or somebody else in our queue?
We better before we're too drunk to read them.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Richard Vallee and Herbert Spicy. Those don't sound like real names.
Oh, no. Ben.
The message is for those of the warm honeyed bosom that didn't appreciate the Nemesis meme. The message goes like this. Grackman is like Batman, but Garrick with a Batman mask on. I responded with a meme of my own, but used a Batman villain. I chose Bane because he's played by Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy was also a Nemesis, so I made a meme using an image of Tom Hardy from Nemesis, but saying a line by Bane. I thought it was funny, but it went unappreciated, like Boromir. Binturong! I did not think that I was going to be able to get through that. I'm palate shot right now, Ben.
I am shithouse drunk at this point, Adam. I am beyond impressed that you did that in one take.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a professional voice actor.
Yeah. So Richard Vallée and Herbert Spicy attempted something that the warm-honeyed bosom ignored? Is that what we're understanding here?
I don't believe it was appreciated. I mean, whether or not ignoring it constitutes disappreciation.
And is the warm-honeyed bosom is a chat room?
I thought up until recently that I was aware of all the different chat rooms.
Isn't it like a Facebook? Is it a Facebook thing?
I'm through joining groups, I think, Ben.
Yeah.
I don't want to join anything else.
I think that one thing that has really revealed itself to us is that we cannot be entirely a part of every group. You know? Like, we have to be our own thing. And that's okay.
I am very satisfied with the idea of inspiring people to form the groups that they want to form.
I want the groups to be safe, fun, cool places that don't have an expectation that we can participate at a 100% level.
I don't think anyone has that expectation, and I think that's good.
Yeah. Our second priority one message, Adam, is from Steve, and it's to John. As a thanks for introducing me to this pod, and in celebration of the near or imminent birth of your first child, I thought I'd try to get you some fatherhood advice from Adam and Ben. I look forward to showing Roz your favorite Trek, the first two seasons of Battlestar Galactica, maybe even the greatest Galactica, when she's old enough. P.S. BT says hi. Okay, so I think we're being asked to dispense some advice, some fatherhood advice. Any ideas, Dad?
Don't try to be a great man. Just be a man.
Who said that? Yeah, it's two fatherless men, I think. It's two childless men. I think that that's a lot to ask of us, TBH.
Yeah. Yeah, that feels like talking out of school. Really.
Yeah.
I couldn't possibly understand what that's like. I'm very excited for your impending fatherhood.
Yeah, John's going to be a dad. That's really great.
Yeah.
I guess my only advice is, like, you know, make your child's life as awesome as you can.
I think one of the first things you should do is, like, make a mobile out of testicular cancer self-exam iconography. Like, I think you want to get on that early. If you're going to have a son, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like Roz is the name of the child, though, so probably not a son.
Oh, yeah. Roz is a great name.
Roz is an awesome name.
How early is too early to be watching Battlestar Galactica, I wonder?
How early is too early to get a P1 message? It's never too early. You go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. It's a great way to promote the production of this program. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Calvin Hudson!
Calvin Hudson!
It's all about Calvin Hudson for me, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Calvin Hudson mostly because I cannot let on the long bar graph of greatest gen history Calvin Hudson to only be given one Shimoda on that timeline. I wish him to have two.
Mm.
He's doing a lot of work here. He is as charismatic as ever.
Yeah.
What sucks is, like, they stick him in that shuttlecraft and they let him have, like, the big scene at the end.
Yeah.
FaceTime to FaceTime.
Why is he teamed up with Sweater Vest Guy?
I don't know. I would have wished for a denouement that was more like face to face, phaser to phaser. Like, there's a version of that we get here. It's ship to ship, but they both kind of limp away from each other in a way that feels a little unsatisfying.
Yeah.
But, man, Calvin Hudson, really like that guy's deal. Unfortunately, this is the last that we will see him. And in bidding him adieu, I give him the second of two drunk Shimodas in a row. What about you, Ben?
Calvin Hudson. Calvin Hudson. Even Darwin got in on that one, Adam. Uh-huh. We know that we're not getting Bernie Casey back, and that fucking sucks. Like, this is a great character. This is a character that deserved more from this series, I think. And I don't know how these decisions get made, right? Like, you get the fucking great actor, and you write the great character, and then the actor is like, has misgivings about being on the dumb show or right. whatever, you know?
I mean, it's not like Bernie Casey's better than this. He was in I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka. Like, like, he's made his choices.
He's in, but he's also in one of the greatest movies of all time, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah.
And he's great. Like, he has such a good foil for Ben Sisko in a way that, like, I think Ben Sisko often plays the foil to the other characters on the show, and it's good to have Sisko in the driver's seat on an episode again.
Yeah.
And Cal Hudson, like an iconic character. Like, I think Bernie Casey made an iconic character out of Cal Hudson. And I don't know if it's...
I feel like people are going to find us disingenuous about our interest in Calvin Hudson's popsicle here. But you're not wrong. He's fucking great.
He's fucking great.
He gets two chances to crush it, and he crushes it.
Yeah, he double crushes it. And you don't double crush it without getting a Shimoda nomination. And I don't want to fall under that two Shimoda nomination threshold that Colin Dinsmore sets on the like season wrap up Shimoda standings. So for that reason, Cal Hudson is my drunk Shimoda. Gotta get that cold press latch. Get that cold press latch.
Am I right? This episode is brought to you by the spring cleaning champions, Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and your drapes, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Clear out your winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like the springtime flowers. Hey, maybe you're getting away on weekends, getting into a swimsuit, into a sexy situation, or you're not wearing pants at all. You want to look your best from head to toe. Get yourself some Manscaped products. You know, it doesn't just have to be your junk. You know, they've got the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and a Handyman Electric Face Shaver. They make great stuff, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And you'll get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next Calvin Hudson-less episode of Deep Space Nine?
Next episode is season 2, episode 22, The Wire. Bashir fights to save his Cardassian friend Garak, who is slowly being killed by a brain implant to which he is addicted.
Okay.
I'm gonna look up the Netflix, but you have to vamp because I'm a little drunk and I don't know how long it's gonna take me, dude.
I love you so much, man. You're the best.
The Netflix description is, while having his weekly lunch with Bashir, Garak is suddenly overcome by extreme pain.
Don't I know the feeling? Well, we might as well see what we are overcome with in the next episode, Ben, by seeing if we're going to do the episode in any particular way. We are currently on square 68, and a Quark's bar is 1, 2, 3, 4 away.
Fuck.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
So if you would do the honors and roll the dice.
I have to do the honors? I thought this was your episode.
All right, fine.
You fucking do it, you jerk.
I like how everyone is soon going to know that I get nice when I'm drunk and you turn mean.
I don't turn mean. How dare you? I'm playing a character.
There it is. I've rolled a 3.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which is 3 squares closer to a Quark's bar, but does not get us out of danger. So
bumps us up against it.
Yeah,
I feel like we're in line at this bar, and there's a bouncer that's like, "You guys are not coming in. You've been overserved already."
Well, that is my experience at most bars with velvet ropes. So I think that's a familiar feeling. How mean will Ben get? Tune in next time to find out.
I don't want you to spread this as a reputation because I'm a very sweet drunk. You know that about me. Don't fucking put...
You take the entirety of this episode out of evidence, then yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Face-to-face, in person, very sweet drunk. That's Benjamin R. Harrison.
Give me a break, man. Like, don't put dirt out about me out in the streets just because I'm a little bit inebriated. I want people to know that I'm a nice guy, and when I enjoy a little bit of party time, I remain a nice guy.
Sure. I mean, look, we'll let the viewers decide for themselves. The reputation...
That is so unfair. We all know that they like you more than they like me.
That is also untrue. Hey, things are going to be all right as we roll into the next episode.
You know what I would like would be for the friends of DeSoto who are on Team Harrison...
Oh, God.
Take 2 Apple Podcasts. Leave a nice review. 5 stars. Tell them you like Ben more than you like Adam. Because Adam is a little bit mean. He's you know, he plays this role like he's a nice guy when he's drunk. But really, he's down low, kind of mean. I don't want anybody to be deceived. Adam, bit of a jerk.
I'm going to turn to camera right now. Which is my camera? Is my camera?
No.
I'm going to address the viewer directly.
Adam, you idiot. It's the one with the red light on top. You know that. It's the one over there.
I want to apologize for my co-host's Calvin Hudson-like turn. I don't believe what he said is right at all. But look, it's up to you.
You're not Ben Sisko. I'm Ben Sisko. You're fucking Calvin Hudson.
I would prefer if you left a 5-star review for any reason. If it happens to dunk on me in the process, so be it.
I would say I will read every Dunk on Adam live review out loud on the show. And I will la-la-la-la-la through every Dunk on Ben review live on the show.
God damn it. Why can't we do anything fun on the show anymore?
Yeah, you don't know where you're at because you're drunk, and that's why you're being mean to me. You're a mean drunk, Adam. Admit it.
One of the friendliest places on the internet is Facebook. I would encourage you to join either of any of the many greatest gen-related Facebook groups. There's also
there's
Reddit
Jim
page.
Shimoda, the Facebook group all about people that want to get fit.
There's Testicular Shimoda, the group of greatest gen viewers that are interested in testicular self-care.
Yeah, you got to roll the nacelle between your thumb and forefinger and check for masses.
There's also our spectacular other show, Ben. I'm talking about Friendly Fire. It's the show we do with John Roderick about war films. If you aren't hip to that yet, I don't even know what to say. That show is great.
Yeah, it's a good show.
And you don't have to watch the war films to enjoy it.
That's one of the main things about the show, is we make sure that we catch you up on the movie before the episode even starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get with it. Hey, if you're gonna be the 5-star review fairy, then why don't you sprinkle some of that dust over on Friendly Fire while you're at it?
Yeah, that would be great. And go to greatestgencon.com and find out when our tour is going to be coming to a town near you. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea for all of our other music.
Got to thank our card daddy, Bill Tilly, for making great, great cards about every single one of our episodes. You can find that artwork on our Facebook page or on Twitter at Bill Tilly 1973.
Three. And, yeah, and sometimes there's even a hologram card. And, you know, I mean, if there isn't one for Cal Hudson, I'm gonna fucking jump off a bridge.
Calling our shot. We need that hollow card for Calvin Hudson. With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and another episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which will probably be just as drunk as this one.
Sorry. When Bashir fights to save his Cardassian friend Garak, who is slowly being killed by brain implant to which he is addicted. Wait.
What?
I misread that. I'm very drunk.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.